Welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
As April kicks off Autism Awareness Month, we talk to Isabel Masca, who shares her energetic personality while describing the life of a mom of a young adult on the autism spectrum, founder of Faces for Autism, optimistic podcaster, and bubble enthusiast. We hope you feel as inspired as we did after this episode.
Welcome to The Interactive Journey. We are so excited to have the one only Isabel Masca here to meet with us and share her journey and answer some of our questions.
Logan's over here a little bit fangirling, so it's fine.
It's the truth. Logan's like, I hope you don't mind if I fangirl because I actually listen to all these episodes at a particularly trying time in her life. Mm-hmm. And she used the episodes from your podcast, which is...
Wow, life on the bright side.
Life on the bright side to help her get through a really challenging time.
And I had to figure out what lights me up.
Yes. Well, no, that's so true. I was going to say I have to close my mouth. I was hanging it open because I was in shock. Somebody actually listens. Yay.
I do.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
Thanks for having a podcast that I can listen to. Aww.
And being an inspiration, really, truly. Aww, not that we should be starting that off. You should be sharing your journey first. But honestly, listening to the different clips and starting at the beginning of your journey, we're going to just jump right into it. Starting at the beginning of your journey on the podcast alone and then to where you've come, but how real you were right off the bat and authentic. I mean, listening to, I believe it was your second episode with you and Kyle and just some of the stuff going back and forth between the two of you. And then subsequent episodes where you're really just trying to get him to say an intro and he either won't or he'll say a portion of it. And I am cracking up because in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, Kyle is totally in his head thinking, yeah, mom, you want me to say that? Yes. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to mess with you.
And I kind of pictured you, I don't know if you were doing this, but kind of walking around the house, just sort of chasing him around. Yes, exactly, sometimes. Chasing him, but following him around, you know, so that he would.
Say it, right. Say it, yes.
You never gave up.
No. And what I love is that I've discovered now in the journey that, literally in the journey, we'll be in the car and I'm taking him to his day program and I'll say, why don't you say such and such? And he doesn't want to do it. Has nothing of it. But if I go and I press speaker or microphone and I decide I'm going to record something, he interjects while I'm talking. And he'll say, I'm really busy. And I'm thinking, oh, you think this is a podcast. I get it. So the kid is now, you know, a mega star, I guess, in his mind anyway.
Well, he's so articulate. When you listen to him, when he chooses that he's ready to interject something, he really is well-spoken, which is amazing. So what was your motivation for starting this podcast?
Well, I think just like all of us, when the world closed down mm-hmm. and we were by ourselves, shut in with our families, we said, we can do, the world is our oyster. The world is just within, you know, this so many odd square feet. But at the same time, I thought, this is my opportunity. My son is safe. I know where he is every day. I know what my daughter's doing. I know what my husband's doing. He's busy. And I have a chance to create something new. So I meditated every day. I did relaxation. I did yoga. I did all the things that I love and I had forgotten about. I started reading again. I started drawing. Mm-hmm. And I did some of these things with my son. He loves to draw, so we did that together. But when I realized, wait a minute, I'm happier. I know there's a pandemic going on, mm-hmm. but I made dinner from scratch. It didn't come out of a box anywhere. It was a beautiful creation. And while I did it, I played music that I loved. I danced around the kitchen. I baked. I was one of those people making banana bread.
Three times a week.
Yes, exactly. And loving what I was doing, even though we were afraid, mm-hmm. I brought in the joy. Mm-hmm. And I realized that we need to figure out what we've forgotten, mm-hmm. what lights us up. And that's what the whole point was. What lights you up? And knowing that, having that opportunity to share that with other people, I was actually working with a social media marketing person online, and she became my mentor. Mm-hmm. And she said, you have to do a podcast. this is a story. And I was thinking, oh man, what am I going to talk about? I never stop talking. Maybe I'll find something in that. And I thought, well, if somebody listens, okay, I have an audience of one.
Right.
And now apparently I'm in the top 10% of podcasts, which blows my mind. There's 3 million podcasts.
Wow.
And that is awesome.
And I'm thinking, am I listening to it again and again and again that much? No. So, somebody must be listening.
So we have a star in our midst.
Well, even just getting reviews. Mm-hmm. I have to review your podcast so you can say, ooh, look at all these reviews.
That's wonderful. What's interesting, what you said, though, about, just to take a step back for a second, about the pandemic and having that time and really looking. I learned how to make bread, personally.
Like, yes.
That was one thing I learned during
that
time. Yes. And actually, not so bad. The first loaf, not so good. But then it turned out not so bad. But I will describe that to people. My kids were home with me for a while, and I was working, too. But it was a gift. I mean, in that way, my life was a gift in that little bubble of time, which in a lifetime, it is a little bubble. It feels like it's so huge. And we would connect sometimes online. I loved that you would do that Q&A time for parents to have different professionals come in and be able to speak. And I could see that with you, honestly, having your son at home, who is used to having some real enrichment outside of the home, to have him at home all the time, that could have been something where you went the other way.
Right.
That glass really being half empty. And you never, I mean, maybe to yourself you did, but I never saw that really, really shine through to everyone else. We all have our moments, but you were really, honestly, you were inspirational with that. And I'm like, my God, why would I ever complain because one of my kids maybe is having a rough day or something like that? I'm like, it could be worse. It could be other things. These are all the good things that are happening. So I did. Yeah. I really found that to be such an inspiration. And then when you started the podcast, I thought that was so exciting. Can you tell people, though, a little bit about Kyle? Because we started talking right about him, but people may not know who he is.
Isn't it funny? We all think, oh, yeah, it's Kyle. Everybody knows who Kyle is. What I love is that so many people do know him, and he has been my inspiration to do so many things in our lives. And that's what I want people to know who have a child who's diagnosed on the autism spectrum or any other issue, that don't look at it as a closed door. Mm-hmm. There are so many doors behind that door that open. Some of them you don't want to open, but you keep going through it, and there's another amazing door and another amazing door. Mm-hmm. My son was diagnosed with autism probably about 18 months. Mm-hmm. Which was unusual back in 2001. Mm-hmm. So looking at that, I'm thankful for early intervention because we went through that process, and he has a twin sister who does not have autism. So when we were looking at the developmental milestones, they developed differently. But at the same time, I remember the doctor patting me on the shoulder and saying, you know, you need to get a part-time job. You're too attached to him. I think you need time apart. I said, but he's clinging to me. She doesn't do that, you know, that sort of thing. And when I went and had him evaluated and didn't listen to him, and I did not get a part-time job, little did I know I was going to get a part-time job for the next 20 years running a support group. Mm-hmm. So I know that my son, now his diagnoses include, okay, they called it back then pervasive development disorder, not otherwise specified. And I always think of the Chinese menu where you get one from column A and two from column B.
Right.
What I decided was that whatever his diagnosis was, we're going to make sure that he was a part of the world again. Mm-hmm. And he disappeared. He truly disappeared. And I remember when it happened. And by 2 years old, no words, no interaction really with anybody. I thought he had eye contact with everyone. And that's what I would say to parents. I thought he was looking at everyone. Mm-hmm. No, he was just looking at me. Mm. So everyone else was furniture to him. And that's really something, that engagement is what we had to start with early on. And that really helped. But then got him through some major milestones. Age 11, boom. And I was running a support group, had no idea that it would happen to me. But a third of kids on the spectrum become seizure, have seizures or something during their lifetime, at least one. Little did I know that when he was having his staring episodes, that those were absent seizures. Had no idea.
So was that was happening prior to age 11 and you didn't recognize it, or did it happen around age 11?
I can look back and see him. My daughter and I used to have a running joke because my son loves to watch videos and DVDs and he likes to rewind them. So he used to put his finger pointer on his up to the temple next to his eye, and he would stare into space. And we'd say, oh, he's just rewinding the video. Because we thought, oh, he's so visual, he's watching the videos. Well, he was, but he was stuck. Mm-hmm. And he was stuck in mini seizures.
Right.
We had no idea. And not to alarm anybody, but at the same time, just to be aware, you know, what we would say, if I look back in hindsight as 2020, I would say I would make sure he's getting more omega-3s, fatty acids in his diet, building the brain, giving it a lot of supports, making sure that you're watching what's going on with play, if there's uninterrupted things, because he ended up with epilepsy at age 11, is on medication, is controlled, thank goodness, right now at age 23, but we do see a movement disorder. So they call it, it's diagnosed as autistic catatonia, which is very, very rare, but it's also caused by a depression, a severe depression.
What does that look like, though, the catatonia, just for those who may not know?
It would be like, you know, think about the movie Awakenings. He would get stuck in a doorway for a half hour, and we could not move his legs, not move them, like cement, stuck as a statue. But if I put his favorite toy in front of him, he would grab it out of my hand. So he was in there, but was not able to say, get me out. The words would not come. He stopped talking. He would be in his bed in a fetal position, just shaking. And it was so much energy. He would have sweat down his back because he was trying so hard to stop doing what he was doing. So I saw that the therapies online, I talked to doctors, and nobody in the United States really deals with except like out in California. What we ended up doing, didn't know I was going to talk about this, but what we ended up doing is I said, okay, what's the best thing I can do? Nobody can help him. Love. I'm going to love him. And I'm going to do the best I can to see what he's doing, take down the information, and show him what he loves, which is how I started doing what I do. Because when I rediscovered that he loves to draw, he had stopped doing that. He stopped watching videos. He went into a really deep depression. So when I said, you know, I'm here, I'm listening to you, I'd say, blink your eyes and tell me yes or no. Squeeze my hand if you like this. Squeeze my hand if you don't like that. I'm here, and I would talk to him. And I tell people this all the time. You think that they're not in there? They're in there. They hear everything.
Absolutely.
They may not be able to communicate back to you. But I said to him, I'm here, and no matter what, I am here for you. And I've got your back. What do you need from me? Just show me. If you can pick up a pencil, if you can point to something, if you look at something, I'm here. And we would just go for rides. We would go sit by the beach, do all those kinds of things. And he slowly came back, and the biggest miracle was the time, I think, he came to therapy, and he picked up a pen, and he drew a line. And we're like, it's a line!
Yay!
And now he's drawing again. It's not the same as it used to be, but he's drawing again.
It's a start.
He's walking. He's swinging on the swings. He's doing a lot of sensory things, and that is what brought him back. The sensory piece is so key.
And when I hear what you're saying, there's so many different components that were involved. Obviously, you as a parent, your love and also your research. Mm-hmm. You look at the medical side of it, the sensory, which ties into occupational therapy, whether it's actual OT or the strategies used by an occupational therapy, and behavioral, because looking at those behaviors that you're being able to see, looking at that him as a whole person.
Right.
I really feel like that sounds like what your journey was at that time at this time.
Looking at the whole person, that's true for anybody, obviously. But with our guys and girls, most definitely girls, we need to look at it as though we are detectives and looking for other people who see the same things that we are seeing and can elaborate them. Experts, obviously, therapists, oh my goodness, they're the people I talk to, especially during pandemic. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
If I didn't have somebody to talk to, I don't know what we would have done to say, okay, and my son is not a Zoomer. He does not want to talk to a screen. So that was very difficult doing school.
That is so common. Honestly, there are so many families out there that we've spoken with who have unfortunately lost years worth of work that they've put into getting their child to wherever they were prior to the pandemic. And in 18 months to 2 years, just the regression that's occurred and trying to recoup some of that. I know our consultants at Interactive Kids are having a hard time with some of the school situations where the individuals are coming back and their problem behaviors are so much bigger than they would have been in a normal year. It's been quite busy. So I think having that connection with you, especially transitioning into that adulthood, you know, I think sometimes people think, oh, you know, they have some type of special need. So it's just the same as any other day. No, that still is a transition. It's a transition away from school, that familiarity, perhaps a preferred situation going to school, to now life is different. Maybe I'm a day program. Maybe I'm at home or I have a job of some sort. That's huge. That's really challenging. So, yeah.
Most definitely. Well, even at the point of pandemic, my son did not understand cognitively that he thought he was homesick from school. Mm-hmm. and kept, he was happy. He was elated. He's like, right. I'm sick. Wow, this is sick. I like this.
I can stay this way.
Yeah.
I can be sick.
It went on for a while. Exactly. He was like, I like this sick. So I had to explain to him that we don't want to get sick. And it started to dawn a little bit on him. But then when he saw that his teachers were on Zoom, this was not making him happy because he's like, okay, so when are we going to do this? No, we're not going to see Henry. We're not going to see his classmates. We're not going to be going to gym class, et cetera. I'm your gym class. Surprise, we're going out to blow bubbles. Let's go. And I think what ended up happening was I realized he's so visual. He needs to see the school. So I said, so I'm driving one day and he was just really upset. And I said, we're going to go to school. We're going to school. We're going to school. Which is never words that came out of his mouth before.
Right.
So we drove to the school and I found myself in the parking lot and I thought, what are they going to do? They see us on the cameras. Mm-hmm. So we went up to the school. He thought he was going in. He's just, here's his routine that he's been lacking. Went up to the door, started pulling on the handles, and I started recording on my phone, and I was sobbing because here he had come to the realization, nobody's home at school. Mm-hmm. I'm not sick. Everybody's not there because he was missing the people. He thought, oh, you're keeping me away from my people.
Yeah.
Right.
So we have to understand that the mindset of our guys is all in there. Try and jump in their heads. And I'm a little neurodiverse myself, so mm-hmm. I get it. Mm-hmm. But some people don't take that time to go, what's going on? What could they be thinking? My son is so visual. What is he thinking about? What's going through his head?
Like, how is he processing the fact that now I'm just, my routine's completely off. Mom's just keeping me here because I'm sick or not sick.
And what is sick exactly?
Yeah.
And I want to use this conveniently but in the future.
I'm sick. Could I be sick about this time next year?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think that example that you provided was great because you're looking at the concrete. Go, and that can cause fear and anxiety for some of the parents. Like, if I take him or her to the school and then can't go in, is that going to be maybe a temper tantrum or somebody who darts away and runs away? All of those things are involved, but it's very tangible to go in and actually see it. We as behavior analysts always talk about, you know, use visuals as one of the tools that we use. Well, you can't get more visual than actually being there. You're talking about multisensory. You're going, you're touching the door, you're looking in, you're hearing that there isn't anyone in there probably. Right. So I think that was a great, great strategy for you.
Well, I posted it and it ended up on the Today Show and it was like 15,000 views or something or other. But the look on his face, and I wrote it in a blog, the look on his face, he pulled me around the school and to look in his classroom window. He knew where his classroom was.
Right.
And he looked in to see where everybody was, looking for his desk. It's not there. It's empty. And the classroom had been cleared out.
Right.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So we do need to be aware of the fact that they're taking in all the stimuli. And our guys, I think they definitely have a sixth sense. They can feel, they check the temperature in the room. They know when somebody's upset. They know when somebody's happy, if they're pissed off to be there. And they will mirror that. And that's what people have to understand. Sometimes meltdowns are mirroring your feelings and emotions.
Right. Well, Rachel, you're a crisis prevention intervention instructor. And so I know that that's something, because you've taught me before, that is something to always be aware of, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a form of communication and, you know, you never really know what other factors are at play, you know, when, you know, anyone really engages in that kind of behavior. I have a question for you, though. What made you in that moment decide to record what was happening and also what made you decide to upload it and share it with others?
Well, that vulnerability that I felt with my son standing there, I went, oh my gosh, I could have saved so much time if I had done this earlier for him, not knowing that he was in that anguish. I said, I need to record this for him because he's so visual, so he can see it later. And then I realized, no, I need to share this with some of our families. And then I said, no, I need to do this as a blog, and did it. And then next thing you know, people were saying, I can so relate to this. This really resonates with our family. Wow, they don't get it, do they? Well, none of us get it. And it was so fresh and new for all of us that it was a whole new emotion that no one ever thought of. You know, I know there's a really cute poster. I think it says something. I think my teacher sleeps at school.
Yes,
they do.
Where the kids think, they think that. Yes. You know, they get up and they're like, oh, okay, they're back.
Right.
And I think that my son realized, you know, that he was at home and life was going on without him. That was his theory.
Right.
Yeah.
I went to Catholic school, and I remember running into one of the sisters who taught at my school, and she was in the grocery store, little grocery store, neighborhood grocery store. And I just stopped. I was frozen. I was maybe like 7 or 8 years old. And I'm just looking up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's Sister Mary. Oh, my gosh. And I was frozen.
You're not allowed out.
Exactly. And I remember getting in the car, and my mom said, do you think they put him in a closet? Like, do you think, like, anybody who's a teacher goes into a closet? But she's a nun. They're not allowed out. And she's like, you know anyone is allowed out.
Not penguins. Wait a minute.
It was so funny. But I'll never forget that. And that was, like, a huge wake-up call for me. Like, oh, yes, you know, we all have lives that we live. So one of the things, just to switch gear a little bit, one of the things that you are so well-known in our area for because of your heart and soul in developing it is Faces for Autism. Can you describe a little bit about what Faces for Autism is?
It's like the petals of a flower. We just keep taping on extra ones on the outside because we started out as a support group in 2002. My son was diagnosed in 2001, so I remember trying to find support. And there really wasn't anything that fit for my son. There was an Asperger's group, but that didn't, when I went to the meeting, it didn't really match up with his life. And they said, get a trampoline is what they basically told me. I'm like, okay, I'll get a trampoline. So there was a gentleman who was an assemblyman at the time who met with something that was called COSAC, which is now Autism New Jersey.
Right.
And he was in town and he said, I want you to meet with this mom. So I met with the man and he told me, well, we don't have enough people with autism in this area, so we closed our support group. And I said, oh, really? I said, so my son's the only one in the entire area? And he said, yeah, but he says, you know what? If you wanted to, you could start a support group or something, you know.
Just that easy.
And I was like, challenge me, why don't you? Right? And my husband looks over and he goes, don't say stuff like that to her. So 20 years later, here we are.
Right.
My one desire was to meet another child with autism, another parent, so that we could sit across the table from each other. I met another lovely woman who actually lives in Linwood. Her son is doing really well right now, and he's a wonderful artist. What I love is that our families just keep growing. We keep adding families, and I see what we do is education and support throughout the lifespan, mainly because we don't know what it's going to be around the corner. Well, I didn't know what 23 was going to look like.
Right.
23 looks very different for a couple of other people that I know, for their children. But we have to work together and share our strength. And that's what our support group online is about. We are hoping to meet in person again very soon. The interesting thing about it is that as the 20 years has gone by, we had 100 people strong in a support group meeting the fourth Thursday of every month. We would meet at a school, and what made us different was I said, I can't go to a meeting unless I have childcare. So we would get volunteer students, teenagers, to help us out. One of my friends had 5 friends, and they came and chased the kids. Right. And we used the school gym, and we tired them out. We gave them a snack before we left, and the parents were so happy they got a break in an hour and a half, something like that, and then they left. So we started getting speakers, and then somebody said, you know, this should be more like nonprofit. You could raise money. You could do this. We could do picnics. And I'm like, oh, logos.
So many options.
You could do all of that. That's right. They're saying it. You could do all of that. Right.
And I'm like, they're saying that royal you. Yeah, it's you. So when that happened, I used my background working at Shore Medical Center, working at the casinos in HR, put all my experience. I ran conferences and workshops. I started a workshop the first year. A conference, I should say. I did a workshop. Then we did a conference at the Ram's Head.
Ah.
And we had 21 workshops. What was wrong with me? I was so excited. I'm going to teach everybody about autism. Mm-hmm. And I brought in some of the best people. We had doctors coming to us saying, I heard about this. Is it okay if I come? And I'm like, if you come, why don't you get up on the stage and talk?
Right.
You know? Yeah. Just amazing. So it snowballed from there. And I realized, oh, my gosh. This is something. And then I talked to the United Way and they said, it's so funny. They said, this is the sexy disease of the time 20 years ago. It's so meaning that people are giving funding to it.
Right.
So I thought it was really interesting because nobody talked about ABA back then. I went and learned a lot about it. And Eden was the first place that was in the area. Mm-hmm. So they weren't in the immediate area. And they opened a place called Wawa House. Wawa funded a building for them in Hamilton. So my son, the ribbon cutting, we're there and we're like, this guy, can you evaluate him, please? And in school, they could not handle him in preschool. They were like, I don't know what to do with him because he wasn't talking. He was just running around like a maniac and the teacher didn't know what to do. And they had him in a typical preschool class. So what they ended up doing was really amazing. I said to them, I've read about this thing and it's called a applied behavioral analysis. And the person who is no longer there said, that makes your child a robot. We're not going to do that here. And I said, oh, well, do you have an alternative? No, we're just going to work with him. I'm thinking, okay. And they're like, trust us,
right,
patting me on the shoulder. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just a parent. So, of course, this is before we had the internet that we have today.
Right. Yeah, it's a much earlier version.
Yeah, this is me going into chat rooms and asking questions. And
is my child going to turn into a robot?
Yes. Right. Yes. And type that in. See what happens. And what ultimately happened was I went to the ribbon cutting because I read about it. Mm-hmm. Standing there, we did an evaluation. Beth Lieberman was the first person who did an evaluation. My son went from screaming and yelling to sitting down, and her handing him blocks. Does this sound familiar? And I think she tried the potato chip thing. It didn't work for him. But she had him within an hour saying yes and no for the first time.
Wow.
And I went, oh my gosh. And they would record them. I remember the VHS tapes and I would look and I go, I wish I could find one. The first one. He had this big, long, red, curly hair. It was the best. And
he's the best. I love his hair. He has beautiful
every
hair.
Day he wore a Blue's Clues shirt like Steve. Mm-hmm. Every single day.
Love him.
So this is our hero. So what ended up happening was by three 1-hour visits, ladies and gentlemen, I go take him back to school and they said, what are you doing? I said, what are you talking about? They said, well, he's paying attention in school. And I said, I'm doing what you told me not to do.
Right.
And we went from there. They got them trained at Eden, his aides in the school. That's and it awesome. Went from there. So I couldn't believe that I could make a difference in my son's day by asking questions and finding out answers and saying, let me try this anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a person who lives life in between the cracks anyway. So only makes sense.
And one of the things FACES does so many different things. I have loved your conferences that you've put on. Mm-hmm. And we were actually talking before you arrived about your comedy nights.
Oh, yes.
And they are
your table's so, the loudest.
We are very loud because we love it. And they're
we
so
are
funny.
So loud. But they're so good. I still follow some of the comedians. I think the last one we were at was before COVID.
Yes.
But I still follow those comedians because they're just like hysterical. But that was one of the best things that happened before, like pre-COVID, we were saying.
Well, isn't it amazing that was the last thing we did last before we shut down?
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
But it was always a very safe environment mm-hmm. to just be fun and funny and know that the people around you are coming from a similar frame of reference and that it's okay just to be you, as quirky as you are. Cause I also feel like I can be quirky. So I just really always love those. And it's always good to have a night of laughing. But one significant event that you do every year is Blow Bubbles for Autism. And I know you've told the story many times, but do you mind just telling us a little bit about where that came from?
Sure. I know with the 20th anniversary, it's amazing to think. I sit there and I go, wow, how did I end up with a 23-year-old son? Well, it starts out early on. You should kind of remember you were there. you have to tell yourself that it just goes by so fast. I heard some parents saying that the other day. Wow. They were saying, oh, I have grandchildren that are like 5 years old. And I'm thinking, and they say, oh, it goes by so fast. I'm thinking, try 23.
Right. I just said that to my 17-year-old. He said, Mom, I think I want to start saving some money. And I said, that's a really good idea because guess what? And he said, because you spend it real fast. I said, no, because in the snap of a finger, you will be 44 years old wishing you could go back and save a third of your money that you were bringing in from your pizza shop days. So,
oh, well, and it does go fast. It's so true. Well, I can't believe I was, let's see, say I was 40 years old, 41 years old, somewhere in there, when my son went to preschool. And I looked at the class, and again, typical classroom, preschool, and I said, I don't know how he's going to play. They don't know how to play with him. He doesn't know how to play. I have to engage them in some way. So from early intervention, I watched what they did. And I said, I'm going to make a list. And I did a list on both sides of a board and with pictures, I think. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you like to do? And the one kid said, I like to go on the swings. Guess what? So does Kyle. What do you like to do? Oh, I like to. So does Kyle. Oh, he likes that too. And I just kept going down the list. And I said, you know what? And somebody mentioned bubbles. And I said, guess what? So does Kyle. And I have bubbles with me. And I brought them. But I also had an exercise where I had those cookie cutters that you can get them like at, used to be A.C. Moore, a box of 101 cookie cutters.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Plastic. Yes. And they're all dinosaur shapes and stars and all these things. So I gave everybody the chance to pick a cookie cutter. And I said, okay, you all have a cookie cutter. Now we have Play-Doh and we rolled it out and you can make shapes and we played with it. And I said, see those cookie cutters and see those shapes? Aren't they all great? Yes. Well, they're all different, right? Yes. And they're still great. Well, that's just like us. We're all different, but we're all wonderful, right? Okay, good. So then we went outside and we blew bubbles and we talked about them, how all of the bubbles are different and how exciting it is. But we sent wishes up and, you know, I said they were prayers, but we're not allowed to say that in a public school. That we would send them up for the families facing autism and different people. And then people are like, I'm sending bubbles up for Kyle and stuff. So when the teachers heard about it, Joe von Sternberg was the one that was the head of the autism program back then. Joe said, let's do this with the other classes. Right. And then the schools in EHT found out about it. Mm-hmm. And they said, let's do it with our school. And next thing you know, actually about 5 years later, we did the Guinness World Records effort. And we have been doing it ever since. It's all over the world. I loved the day after, because we still read newspapers back then in 2012, opening up my computer and saying, oh, let me just put in Bubbles for Autism and see what comes up. And I cried for 3 straight days because I found articles all over the world about what we had done. And they mentioned it. And I was thinking, okay, so my epitaph is I'm the bubbles lady. Mm. There could be worse. There could be worse. It could see terrible things. So knowing that we're spreading awareness and hope to families, and the whole key was interaction.
That connection. Yes.
Connection is key. If you don't have a connection, I don't know what you do. I mean, my son found a friend, his first real friend in his life, in his special services school classroom in high school. And this guy has CP, doesn't care anything about what my son has or doesn't have, but he loves him. Right. And they sit and hold hands, they're buds.
I've seen the pictures. It is, it's amazing.
We all need a friend.
We do, we do. So when, is it a specific day each year?
We do. Now, we kind of, like bubbles, we let it go into the four winds where people, I don't have control over it anymore. They've taken on their own projects, their own programs. My daughter wrote a book and schools read it all over the world about it. She wrote one called So Did Kevin. And it's kind of along the lines of what we did with Kyle in the classroom to teach kids to, and it's not about autism. It's about the bubbles and playing and connection, but they can do it any day in April because it's celebrating Autism Acceptance and Awareness Month. I know that people use the word neurodiverse now. So we try and honor that. I know some people are offended by the puzzle piece. Some people like to talk about the rainbow infinity sign. I said what I would do is I would honor them and I changed our logo because we were one of the first people to have a puzzle piece 20 years ago. And Autism Speaks copied us. So, and everybody hates them. So I said, okay, well, I did blue first and I did puzzle piece. So let's flip it. We're called Faces and now the smiley face is our logo.
Yes, so love it.
The heck with it.
Yes. I have, you know, other than working in the field, I don't really feel like I should decide. But I loved the puzzle piece.
Me too.
Because I feel like we are all pieces of that puzzle. I never interpret it as someone missing a piece.
Well, I say it the other way around. We're missing a piece in our world if you're not here.
Right, right.
Yeah. And when you try and explain that to somebody, I think the TikTok generation has really turned everybody on its ear, if you would agree, because they're out there saying, I'm actually autistic. Well, I don't use that hashtag. Right. I don't think, and I want the voices to be heard, but I also listen to them.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, well, this offends you. Well, guess what? There are so many people on the autism spectrum who love that puzzle piece. And the parents, and they're like, well, it's the parents who are pushing it. And I'm thinking, well, this is the way it is. We all like something. You like things. Can't we like them too?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and if that's a swastika, it's a different story.
Yes, yes. But it's about that connection. You recognize that this is something that certain groups of people, and more than just one or two, think of it as a negative connotation. So let's figure out something else. I love that you're just an innovator. Yeah. And I think that's one of the many great things you bring to the table.
I love that we were just kind of talking about how you manipulated the situation almost to give Kyle the most social opportunities that you could with just peers in general, but typical peers, and helping them kind of socialize with him, but also him socialize with them to manipulate the situation. That's kind of how we have to work it in. And I know, Rachel, you had a question, just kind of how do we promote that? And for parents out there that have more of a difficult time doing that, like, what do you suggest to them to do?
I think that you start really organically. And I know that we were talking about the experience of being in a playground. And who's gravitated towards your child? Sometimes it's a child that's younger than your child, and that's okay. If your child feels developmentally that they need to be, I can't imagine a five-year-old goes, I need to talk to five-year-olds. That doesn't happen. And my son was larger than a typical three-year-old. He was a five-year-old size, and kids would come up and go, what's wrong with you? Why are you sitting at the top of the swings, you know, or the slide? And he would just sit there, and I remember going to Chuck E. Cheese, and he'd be up there eating his pizza because it was quiet up there. Mm-hmm. He didn't have anybody by. And they're like, no, we slide here. Get down. And and I thought, well, this age group really isn't working for him.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is we would play with cousins. We would have the opportunity to go to a support group meeting where we would play. And if somebody had a game or something that he really connected to, or when we used to have the bounce place, I loved that place. That was the best because he loved it when the bigger kids would get in the bounce house and he would lay on the ground and they would bounce and he would bounce just by laying on the ground.
It's a throw me a party, right?
Yes,
and they had multiple rooms and they had slides and it was great.
What that was?
Yes. And they have throw me a party that is a party store, but then an offshoot of that is an actual play place. We could have parties and things like that.
I missed it.
It was a whole generation.
You were an in-betweener generation.
And the best part about it was that you would be in there, and after that, this is what you honestly have to do, and college students understand this as well. You have to provide pizza at every event in order to get people to show up.
Yes.
It's the only motivator.
Mm-hmm. Even as adults.
Exactly. Kids. So the parents would say, okay, we've got dinner. We've got entertainment. It was always somebody's birthday.
Right.
So it was a practice birthday party every single month.
Right.
So we would have cupcakes, we would have singing, we would, you know, so you had that environment to practice. So I think that was a really good practice for my son, is we always did that. So I'm hoping that my younger generation people, and again, I feel like such an old lady, but I'm 60. And back then, I remember, you know, if you look at a picture, I was looking on the internet, they said, look at a picture of somebody in 1965 at 60, and now, not even close.
Right. It's true. We're so much younger.
I never had curlers. Yes, that's exactly.
Right. I'm 46, which apparently is like the new 36.
Oh, you look 36. Hello.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that. But I think that I have no idea where I just went with that. But I went to curlers. Where did mom's brain go?
Throw me a party and that connection.
That
practice and connection.
Oh, yes.
But playing and connection, that is key. I'm hoping that my younger parents who are out there, who might be listening and have a child who is actually has ABA therapy, doesn't, is thinking about it, what have you, is interested in learning more, is curious like I was, because I think that's the key, is to remain curious. Don't be shut down and stay home and say, oh my gosh, my kid is a disaster, what do I do? Try 5 minutes. If he lasted 5 minutes and then leave, that's what I used to tell the parents. Try 10 minutes. Okay, yay. Because if they could come out and help me to run the new groups for the new parents. I need them.
That's what I was wondering. Have you found anyone who will take up the torch? Because I know you have a support network in your faces and in your life that have helped to make all this magic happen.
Yeah.
And so now at some point that torch is going to be passed.
And I think soon, because even if I'm still running the nonprofit, I need to plug somebody else in because I don't know the cool toys anymore. Right. I don't know what bubble guppies are or whatever they're called. You know, I know Blue's Clues, the old generation. I'm the OG Blue's Clues person.
Right.
So knowing that we have moms out there who are learning new things and are interested in bringing in speakers about that. I need to talk about guardianship, you know, boring stuff with people because my kids are older. But I think that, you know, and my daughter was saying, and yeah, mom, you can't chase kids down the hallway anymore. You know, you need to sit down. So I need those moms. I need those dads. What I'm discovering is that more people want to do activities as opposed to a support group. So it's almost like we're giving them the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down.
Yes. Okay.
We need to take them somewhere. A man has offered us cornhole. Well, nobody can figure out cornhole, so I think my teens group is going to be doing the cornhole.
Yeah, that's fun there.
So the younger kids, they go back in the play area. Mm-hmm. And I want them to have some type of interaction. And I always had Chris Devaney, who's a behavior specialist, who was wonderful with the kids. He's mentally younger than I'll ever be, but he needs somebody to take on his gauntlet as well. Having people who help with the kids is key. But, I mean, I set up all the stuff. If the parents would just go and enjoy it. I mean, because to me, it's like, am I going to go to a movie about the history of golf?
Right.
If I don't want to go? Yeah. No. You need to go and learn. You need to glean all the information that you can. I can learn all this stuff, but I think I need to learn my stuff now. Yes. So I'm hoping that parents who want to do that will reach out to me and say, you know, I think I can do this. I have a couple of people I'm interested in using in those spaces, but I think it might start out as a committee of activities people.
Yeah, so you are similar to me in that we take on a lot of different projects.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've noticed that people aren't going to do that to that level where they're going to take on multiple projects. But finding the right people for the different projects is key. So if people are listening to this and they're like, oh, I want to get involved, but I don't know that I can do this many things, you can be part of this in a very specific way. If you are interested, if you're interested in fundraising, that would be something that I'm sure you would welcome. Planning activities, participating in activities. You can pick one part of the area so you're not overcommitting, which is what, you know, I tend to do. But
I'll take it all.
There definitely is opportunities in spaces for autism. Good. You're the younger generation. You welcome that 24-year-old.
I volunteer as tribute.
Well, I think it's basically, it comes down to what we said earlier was the petals of a flower.
Yes.
Where you can be one of those petals. Yes. And you're just as valuable as the center. Yeah. And we need that because it radiates out to so many people. You make a difference by doing things. I love watching some of my parents who have grown and flown the coop. And I look over the fence and I'm like, bye. Oh, you're leaving.
Don't forget me.
And I think, wow, we've sent them off and their kids can go to college. Yeah. They can do these different things or whatever it is. They've got jobs and they're successful. And I don't want to say, oh, you'll be back because you're going to need support. No, I want you to say, I've learned as much as I can and gleaned all of the good things that I can for this, and I can help other people.
Beautiful. This is almost why you made faces. Mm-hmm. This is what you want. You want to look over that fence and be like, we've given you what we can give you.
Amen.
Come here to take it.
Absolutely.
That's all we can really ask of parents is just to show up and want to do better and learn more.
But also when it's time to come back around for something like guardianship.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, guys will still be there with open arms, like, hey, come on back. We're still here.
So it's like a lifespan thing. You can check in and out. It's like picking up something in the episode 10 on Netflix, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I just needed that episode. I don't need the other five.
Right.
I'm good.
Are there any upcoming events that Faces is hosting that you would like us to know about or share with the listeners?
Sure. We have two. Friday is April 1st. We have from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. is Love Streaming for Autism, our telethon, which will be on Facebook on the Faces for Autism page. And then April 2nd is Blow Bubbles for Autism celebration of the 20th anniversary out at Reed's Organic Farm in Egg Harbor Township.
Awesome. So listen to our podcast, go call into the telethon, and then go and blow your bubbles for autism awareness.
Well, now is time for Logan's rapid-fire questions.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. It's about dinosaurs. I'm in trouble.
First question.
Take off question 8.
Stegosaurus.
Okay. So the goal of these is just to answer as quickly as you possibly can. First thing that comes to your mind. So, four-letter word that starts with M.
Milk.
Sleep in or wake up early?
It depends on the day. Wake up early, I'll say.
Tool that you never leave home without.
Oh, you have to have an emery board.
Oh. What animal are you most like?
I saw a cat when you said that.
What's your go-to lazy dinner to make?
The one I just saw is not the one. it's got to be spaghetti then.
I was going to say that too. That's okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. Your most frequently used emoji?
It's some kind of hearts thing.
Love it. Favorite board game?
It's so weird when you look at your brain. Checkers.
Checkers. What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Chicken.
Your favorite actor?
Oh, I saw Bradley Cooper and George Clooney.
Ooh,
favorite. Bradley Clooney.
Yummy.
That's a new one. Favorite rainy day activity?
Drawing or painting.
All right, and your life motto?
Live bright.
Live bright. Brightly, I love or whatever it. It is.
Yes.
I have one more question. What's the movie that Kyle's into right now?
Oh, that's a good one.
It's got to be something. Oh, Anastasia with Meg Ryan.
Really? I have not seen that one. I'm going to put it on my list, Kyle, just for you.
Although he was talking about Bed of Roses. That's a throwback.
Oh, yes. I remember that one.
Slater. Christian Slater.
Yes.
That's today. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. All day today.
Wow. I remember seeing that in the movie theater.
I do, too. Mm-hmm. We're dating ourselves.
Yes, we are. Right?
Well, these are all very happy things, and really, you have made it very easy for us to live our lives on the bright side. So if you are out there, check out Life on the Bright Side podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure you review and subscribe to that, as well as those who are interested in Faces for Autism. We'll put contact information in the notes for the show for you and how people can participate. You're involved in so many wonderful things. Is there anything that you would like to plug or talk about right now?
I just want to plug your podcast because you are so cool.
Thanks.
You have like the best equipment. This should be television. It's so cool.
Two mics and a mixer, right? Isn't that what that's called?
Yeah, but it's colorful. So
it is colorful.
I do my podcast in my closet.
And look how wonderful it is. Sometimes the real in the moment is the best way to do it. So, you know, that's really admirable too.
Our goal is to have a studio. So,
well, come back. My office isn't good enough for you.
I think it's evolving.
I do love the office.
Little padded walls. You know, you could use that for a lot of things.
Apparently, that's our goal. I had no idea. I'm very excited.
Come back in a year.
Wow, my goal is padded walls as well. But I don't know. We don't mean the same thing.
I was thinking that too. I'm like, I feel like I might need padded walls.
Sounds like a good vacation.
Okay, yeah. I think we just went off the rails. All right, sorry about that.
Yes, well, welcome to the interactive journey where it never takes you where you think it will, but sometimes it ends up in an even better place, like where we are today with you, Isabel. Yeah, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
In honor of our guest today, don't forget to live your life on the bright side.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey.
Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram @The Interactive Journey.